From the sports desk of the Ames Tribune, Ames, Iowa, the home of the Cyclones. This is the Cyclone Slant. With sports editor Travis Hines. Now, the Cyclone Slant.
Hello and welcome to the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I am Travis Hines coming to you on a Thursday afternoon that I previously thought I would be spending driving up to Hilton Coliseum to watch Iowa State play Texas in a makeup game to accommodate Iowa State's COVID-19 pause from last month. But that game was indefinitely postponed in order to make way for the Texas-Oklahoma game that got moved from Tuesday to Wednesday to Thursday and is now off indefinitely as the state of Texas and parts of Oklahoma continue to deal with really horrifying, terrible, frightening circumstances given by the winter weather there that has completely roiled the electric grid and has really caused some frightening circumstances for the people down there. So certainly my thoughts, with really everyone down there, covering the Big 12 now for as long as I have, certainly have a lot of friends, acquaintances, and colleagues down there thinking about them and their neighbors right now as they try to, work their way out of what sounds to be just an absolute calamity. From a basketball standpoint, moving on to looking at Iowa State, things have not improved since last we've talked. Iowa State now coming off an 18-point loss to Oklahoma State. They're scheduled to play Oklahoma on Saturday, then go down to Texas in Waco to take on number two and undefeated Baylor. We'll see. I've reached out to Baylor to see if there's any concern about that game being played because of the power situation down there. Because of the emergency situation down there, frankly, waiting to hear back. I would hope that, 4 or 5 days from now, things are vastly improved down there, but certainly can't take anything for granted. And making assumptions, we've learned over the last year, is about as dumb a thing as you can do. But from a basketball standpoint, Iowa State 2-15, 0-12. I don't know that there's a lot to say. Obviously, things are bad. Usually when I do this podcast, I like to have an angle, some thoughts to open it up with before getting to your questions. And as I kind of scoured what Iowa State's done in recent weeks, obviously I knew I was going to have to talk a lot about what didn't go right, but I was looking for things that maybe have. And, George Condon has played well in stretches lately. Rasheer Bolton, I think, has been pretty good, but none of those, you look when it weighed against the situation that Iowa State finds it in, I don't know how much any of that is worth spending a lot of time on. You look, Iowa State right now only has two players with offensive ratings over 100. That's Rasheer Bolton at 101 and Solomon Young at 102.7. Things are just not good with Iowa State basketball right now, and I know they're getting credit for competing hard, and that's something certainly we should find noteworthy because it'd be easy to give up. But the results, beyond just the 2-15 and 0-12, are just really not there. I mean, I'm looking at the KenPom. I've been staring at this for feels like at least the last hour, trying to parse some silver linings or to project some, positivity towards the future, just to be fair to the team again. That I know is trying and is trying to work their way out of this, but I mean, it's really a historically bad season for Iowa State. I mean, when you weigh everything, how you weigh this season with COVID and everything that is impacting, I don't know exactly how you do it, but if you just take the results, this is going to rank as maybe the worst season in Iowa State basketball history. They have gone winless in conference play just once in their history in 1936-37 season. They went 0-10 in the Big Six. Obviously, they're going to play more than 10 games this year. They're already 0-12, so this is the most losses without a win in school history. The schedule does not look favorable to picking up another win. Currently, it's Oklahoma, Baylor, TCU. I think the TCU game is probably close to a coin flip. Oklahoma and Baylor lean much heavier to the Sooners and Bears.
and we'll see about the games against Texas, Texas Tech, and Kansas State getting rescheduled. Presumably, they maybe squeeze one in next week or two in or all three in the first week of March if they can. You know, the only game you probably feel, you know, bullish about if you're an Iowa State fan is that Kansas State game, but obviously the Wildcats already beat Iowa State. So again, you're looking at a team that could potentially be the first in 7 years to finish without a win in Big 12 play, the first time in, what, 75 years, almost 75 years in school history. And it's just, you know, breaking down the numbers, you know, it's tough. You know, Iowa State adjusted offensive efficiency ranking 190th in the country, defense 140th. Effective field goal, 243. Turnover percentage, 290. Offensive rebounding percentage, 285. On the defensive end, effective field goal, 222. Offensive rebounding, or defensive rebounding, 342. Literally one of the worst 15 in the country at hitting the defensive glass. Assists on field goals made, 320th. It's just that you go down the line and everything is just bad. Is just inefficient, is poor when ranked against the entire country, not just the Big 12. I mean, I'm looking now in the Big 12 during conference play, they rank last in 1, 2, 3, 4 different categories. It's just, it's, you know, there's hard to find silver linings. And I think the time to create those, and at this point, I would say we'll have to create them if they're going to exist. They're not just going to appear. Is dwindling, you know, and you can't rule it out. You know, I think Jaden Walker has had some minutes that you, maybe you feel a little good about if you're an Iowa State fan, but the turnovers are clearly an issue. And it's just hard to judge and evaluate players too, I think, in these circumstances, you know, not just with the pandemic, but with, you know, a team that is struggling as mightily as Iowa State. It's hard to kind of, you know, extract the variables to give yourself a really good idea about what you're seeing, or at least that's been my experience and the experience of some people I've talked to about Iowa State, that things are just a jumble right now and it's really hard, you know, to get a great evaluation. So again, was hoping to have something, you know, to offset, because it's not fun for me to come and talk about how bad everything is, but you know, the other side of the ledger is just is pretty light right now, and we'll see if Iowa State can change that going forward, but that's just kind of the name of the game right now. When you're 2-15 and 0-12 in the Big 12, and you're at a place like Iowa State that has a lot of pride and a lot of tradition, you know, you don't get a lot of credit for trying hard, or at least not for very long. Especially again, nothing happens in a vacuum. This season is not happening in a vacuum. It's happening within the context of two previous losing seasons in the last three. You know, it's coming in the context of finishing near the bottom of the Big 12 last year, you know, just what, two games ahead of Kansas State last year in ninth place, finishing 10th in 2018, the kind of the regular season collapse in 2019, coupled with the first round exit. You know, none of these things happen independent of each other. And I think that's why the program finds itself where it is, where we're talking about and asking Steve Prohm about his job security. And I think legitimately so. You know, where that goes, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, with every loss, obviously, you know, not exactly brilliant insight here from me. If these losses continue to mount, and if they don't even get a win or two, you're up against a lot of history to bring a coach back for another season after the run that Iowa State has been in the last 4 years. You know, if you're tagging a winless conference season on to the end of that, but still games to go, and we'll see. Jamie Pollard has been mum on the topic. You know, people have reached out to him, including myself, to talk about the men's basketball program, and have not gotten a response, which isn't surprising. There's not, you know, the joke is as soon as an AD comes out in support of a coach, that's the death knell. So I'm not surprised that there hasn't been a statement. You know, and Pollard keeps his cards close when it comes to stuff like this. So I'm sure we'll be hearing from him at some point in the coming weeks, whether it is to announce that Steve will be back for another year or he won't. And that'll be, I guess, really that's the main narrative. That's the main story to really look for through the end of this year, because you know, there's not much else to really talk about when, at least within the grand scope of the program, that is obviously front and center in everyone's mind, and not surprisingly and understandably. So hopefully, like, if you're still listening after 10 minutes of me droning on about how bad the basketball team that you support is, let's go to your listener questions. Hey, and the other thing, like, eventually we'll be able to talk about football. We haven't heard from Matt Campbell since this Fiesta Bowl. It sounds like spring football is still maybe 5 or 6 weeks off. So, you know, it's pretty slim pickings to talk about what will likely be your top 10 and potentially even top 5 Iowa State football team. But presumably we'll be able to do that here shortly, where we can start talking to coaches and start talking to players and start really ramping up to what is probably going to be the most anticipated football season in Iowa State history, which I feel like we have probably said now maybe 3 years in a row, which is usually a pretty good sign for a program. But here's your questions. Bob Stewart, which is definitely a real name, wants to know, who is the most accomplished pro player in 10 years, Monte Morris or Tyrese Halliburton? Tough to say. I'm going to lean towards Tyrese, because right now, as good as Monte Morris has been, you know, he still has not been a starting point guard in this league. Tyrese Halliburton as a rookie is already, he's not starting, but he's playing crunch time minutes for the Kings, is in the rookie of the year conversation. He's obviously, and when you're a lottery pick, you're just given a lot more opportunity as well, because teams have a much bigger investment in your future than if you're the backup point guard who was a second round draft pick, spent a year in the G League on a 2 year or on a 2-way contract, and now is on, I think, what's a 3-year contract for Monte Morris as the backup there, making I think $8 to $9 million a year, which, you know, that's generational wealth right there. So I think Monte Morris is doing just fine. But I think, you know, the trajectory he's on is probably to, you know, either play out that contract or maybe get traded and, you know, be a starting point guard for a few seasons and make even more money and have that opportunity to really showcase himself. But the trajectory that Tyrese Halliburton is on right now is not to be a starter in a few years. It's to be an all-star in a few years, frankly, when you're off to the start that he's off to, when you're already a lottery pick on top of things. I think his... the future for Tyrese Halliburton is potentially, you know, it might be the best Iowa State player in professional Iowa State player ever. I mean, I think it's clearly Jeff Hornacek right now, unless I'm forgetting somebody obvious, but Hornacek, you know, going to the two finals, being I think multiple time All-Star, he's the bar to clear right now. But Tyrese Halliburton, I think, will have a chance to maybe take that mantle away from him in the next 10 or 15 years. Tyler Rich wants to know, if there is a men's basketball coaching change, do you think Jamie Pollard can and will? What do you think Jamie Pollard can and will spend in terms of salary? Prohm is, I believe, the 9th and maybe even 10th highest paid coach right now. It's him and Boynton in the 9th and 10th spot, I believe, in the league. What will Iowa State play? I don't know. And this is independent, I think, of the Prohm question of whether he returns for a 7th season. If you're Iowa State and you're committed to making men's basketball a premier program over the long haul, it's hard to say you're doing that and then rank 9th or 10th in the league in salary. You know, I think the Suka basketball complex is approaching 15 years old. Renovations at Hilton Coliseum have been pushed off a number of times now. You know, there were some redesigns, and then with the pandemic, that kind of changed everything. But I think Iowa State, you know, financially is behind a lot of the other programs in the Big 12. They're obviously never going to be number one or number two when you've got Texas and Oklahoma there, and there are some other big spenders in the league. But, you know, it's hard to, you know, you got to put your money where your mouth is a lot of times. And when you're 9th or 10th, that sends a message about your ability to attract the highest tier coaches, the highest tier players, because of the resources you put behind your program. So I think that's something that Iowa State will have to address in the coming years, you know, whether Steve Prohm is a coach or it's somebody else. Because they've made a lot of strides. I mean, you're coming you know, it's kind of amazing to me that Tsukup is now almost 15 years old, because that was a crown jewel type recruiting piece for them and development piece. But you go around and look at some of the other practice facilities around the country, and I've had the chance to look at a few. I mean, there are some absolute palaces around the country right now that, you know, again, there's a spending spree for that kind of stuff to keep pace. And Iowa State, again, I don't want to say they're falling behind, but they're definitely not ahead of the curve, and things are going to be more difficult with the financial situation coming out of the pandemic. And we don't yet know what Matt Campbell is being paid. We know that they've committed another $3 million over the next 3 years to the coaching staff. How big is Matt Campbell's number? And how does that affect department-wide budgets and finances? All remains to be seen. But again, you know, whether you're looking for a new coach in a month or two or not, I do think it's fair to talk about, you know, what is the financial commitment to men's basketball relative to the rest of the league, because again, you know, money talks, and the more you can commit to it, the more you can commit to the program, the more it sends the message that you're committed to winning and having the success that you had the last 10 years going forward for the next 10 as well. Next question comes from Evan. Why haven't we seen playing time for Harris, Dubar, and Blackwell? I know they want to get a win, but I think it's worth more to see what we have in them versus one meaningless game playing all the older guys. The playing time is something that Randy Peterson and I talked about over on the Cyclone Insider podcast, which I highly recommend everybody go subscribe to and listen to on usually Tuesday evenings on KXNO. And you know, I think there's two sides of that coin. You've got to be fair to the game. You've got to be fair to your players and your program and do everything you can to compete and win games. But I do think, I am surprised we're not seeing more of Dubar and Blackwell. I mean, Harris is a third-year junior, so not exactly a youngster on that front. But when you're talking about Blackwell and Dubar, Dubar started a few games. Blackwell's been pretty much buried on the bench for the last few weeks. And, you know, neither of them have played in a couple games. I'm surprised they're not getting 5 to 10 minutes, which I think you can do, and you're still honoring, you know, being competitive and allowing your team the best chance to win a game. You know, when you're playing those other guys 35 minutes a night, is there diminishing returns? Is that unfair to those young guys who are going to be presumably the future of the program? I think it would be appropriate and make sense to get those guys some run. Again, I'm not advocating, you know, throw them in the starting lineup and give them 25 minutes a night. I think that would probably be overboard, given, you know, the coaching staff obviously does not think that they can help in a major way in winning, or they'd be playing. But I think getting them some experience, allowing them the opportunity to try to contribute in short stints, you know, makes some sense. But again, you know, when you're 0-12, you know, playing guys that you don't think are going to help you win is not really in a coach's mindset, especially if you're potentially coaching for your job. You're trying to win every possession, every minute, every game to try to show things moving in the right direction, which again, you could argue against saying, you know, winning games isn't going to show the direction of the program. It's going to be the younger players. Which, you know, I think is an interesting argument. But again, I think it's reasonable to look at this in both ways. Cattle Company wants to know, how many days until football starts? Like I said earlier, sounds like they're targeting, you know, mid to late March for spring football to start. I certainly would not anticipate a spring game this year. I think for the last 2 years, it hasn't been scheduled to be played. I don't think it's something that Matt Campbell has a lot of interest in. And certainly with COVID this year, would seem unlikely, but hopefully we can at least hear from the players and the coaches once that gets going, because again, as we mentioned earlier, this is going to be a wild ride into the spring and into the summer and into the fall, getting ready and anticipating an Iowa State football team that is going to be the highest rated in the preseason ever in program history. And legitimately so. It's not smoke and mirrors. As I wrote over and over again during the football season, you know, whatever you thought their college football playing ranking should have been, or if you thought it was too high at six, the bottom line was that was a damn good football team. Whether you had them at 6, 10, 8, 12, 14, wherever you slotted them, it was undeniable that they were really, really good, and they're bringing just about everybody back. So they're going to have a legitimate shot to compete for whatever level, platform, achievement you want to put out there, I think is on the table. Not certainly not guaranteed, certainly maybe not even likely given how hard all those things are, but they're going to have the roster to compete at the highest echelons of college football, which is a pretty astounding thing to say when taken in the context of the entire history of Iowa State football. Mark Wills asks, is Carl Anthony Towns going to be traded from the Wolves? It seems like the organization is once again not getting traction. Mark, I ain't trying to talk about the Timberwolves. Man, that has been the most depressing franchise in a long time to only get to one Western Conference Finals in with Kevin Garnett, to have gone to the playoffs once since his departure in a league where over half the teams make the playoffs. They're just a mess. It sounds like Anthony Edwards is doing well, that there's some hope that he can be, you know, live up to that number one draft pick. But man, anything about the Wolves is depressing. And I know that this has not been the most uplifting podcast you've ever listened to. So probably best just to leave it at that. Last question comes from Christopher Miller. Which of the Chef's Table barbecue episodes did you watch and which was your favorite? And of all the places you've traveled to cover sports, what's the best barbecue you've had? I've watched three of the Chef Table barbecue episodes. All three of them have been fantastic. One in Central Texas, one in Sydney, Australia, and the last one I just watched was based in Charleston, South Carolina. All super interesting. I tweeted this, but I turned it on thinking I'd be watching some light, fluffy, maybe flippant barbecue food show. But like, those are legit documentaries about the history of the food, about the history of the chefs, and it is it's affecting. I highly recommend it. I got one more to watch. I don't know who the subject of the last episode is. I didn't peek ahead, but really, really good. If you like good storytelling, if you like barbecue, if you just like food in general, all very interesting. Big recommend. Big recommend. In terms of best barbecue, man, that's a tough one. I also have a terrible memory for stuff like this. I can love things and then just totally forget that I had them. But clearly going to and through Kansas City a lot, you know, for the Big 12 tournament, to go down to cover games in Lawrence and Manhattan, go to Kansas City a ton. So I know that one pretty well. Now it's Kansas City Joe's is excellent. The Z-Man, their ribs are great. I think it's Char Bar in Kansas City is good in the West, whatever that neighborhood is. And but the one that has been that I keep going back to recently as the best has been Q39. That place has been spectacular. I usually go to Jack Stack because it's within walking distance of the hotels. For the Big 12 tournament, really good. I don't think it's as good as those other ones for the most part, but still very tasty. The last time, or I guess two times ago, when Iowa State played at TCU, I stood in line for the Pecan Lodge's brisket, which was absolutely worth it. That was fantastic. I've contemplated standing in the Franklin Barbecue line in Austin a few times, but just have not been able to pull the trigger because it's a multi-hour long line. The few times I've been there, and maybe could make it work. But that's certainly on my list if I get another opportunity to go down to Austin in the coming years. Who knows? Yeah, those are all really good. All right, so that's, I think, probably all I've got. Again, Iowa State plays Oklahoma on Saturday at 5 o'clock, looking to get that first Big 12 win against Lon Kruger's Sooners. This has been the Cyclone Slant Podcast. I'm Travis Hines. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.